well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend. It was my birthday weekend, so, you know, hey, I'm here. It's another year around the sun, so that was good. And, of course, the big news over the weekend, the shooting in Twin Falls, Idaho, at the In-N-Out burger location that left three people dead, seven others injured. It looks like of the seven who were injured, two are still in the hospital. The other five have thankfully been released. And this could have been so much worse were it not for the fact that an off-duty police officer who was apparently eating inside the restaurant engaged the shooter, as well as a guy who was planning on stopping for lunch with his girlfriend there at that location. This individual, Jordan Salinas, an armed citizen, who, along with that off-duty officer, called a hero by local law enforcement there in Twin Falls. And, you know, I noticed, couldn't help but notice, that the gun control groups and the gun control activists who spent a lot of time talking about this shooting over the weekend, at least those who did, didn't have much to say about the presence of these armed citizens, the off-duty law enforcement officer, Jordan Salinas. And I think that that's telling. You know, there was one Bernie bro on X this weekend who did talk about this, shared a portion of the video showing Salinas firing back at the shooter, and was very troubled by this. Very troubled. Said that, you know, these good guy with the gun situations are way more complicated than we like to think that they are. Because, you know, every round that's fired, I mean, if it doesn't hit a target, boy, it just keeps going. And that is true enough. But it does beg the question, do you prefer the alternative of nobody shooting back? Because, by the way, that applies to a round fired by a law enforcement officer who's on duty, a law enforcement officer who's off duty, and an armed citizen who just happens to be in the, you can call it the right place or the wrong place, at the right or wrong time. Bullets don't behave differently based on who's pulling the trigger. Right? So if your issue is, well, shots were being fired at this shooter in a parking lot where there were families, where there were other people present. Yes. Would you prefer that nobody have fired back? Because, again, I mean, you can't guarantee that an on-duty police officer is going to be a marksman, hit the target with their first shot. Right? Essentially, at that point, what you are arguing is that a slaughter is better than a shootout. And in fact, this is not an uncommon position for gun control activists to take. This has stuck with me for 20 years, at least. Back in the early days of Cam and Company, there was a conflict in Darfur, and I distinctly remember reading a column. It was from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I used to be able to tell you the reporter who wrote this column, but I'm blanking on it right now. But he was talking with an aid worker in Darfur. And this is where a genocide is taking place, essentially. And there was talk about arming the victims of this genocide so that they could fight back. And this aid worker said, no, that's a terrible idea. Because when you introduce guns to the victims, you create uncertainty. Yeah, you do. Which I think is better than the certainty of a genocide. I mean, it is true. When people can shoot back, yes, a civil war could break out. There could be casualties on both sides. But if you don't, then you've got an armed group of people shooting at an unarmed group of people, and you've got a slaughter happening. I will take unpredictability. I will take uncertainty every time over the certainty of mass murder. And yet this gun control activist on X apparently would not. And based on the silence from other gun control groups, gun control advocates, I'm guessing that they're in the same position. They don't want to do anything to call attention to the actions of Jordan Salinas or this off-duty police officer. They don't want to encourage anybody to get it in their head that I should carry a gun in case, God forbid, I'm somewhere where somebody shows up with hate or evil intentions, decides that they want to kill as many people as possible. The last thing they want are armed citizens. So even though Jordan Salinas is the type of armed citizen that you would think a gun control advocate could get behind, and we'll talk about this a little bit in just a minute, they can't. They can't get behind him. The Idaho Statesman had a great article, a great profile on Jordan Salinas. Headlined, "When Gunshots Rang Out at a Twin Falls In-N-Out, This Idaho Man Shot Back." Jordan Salinas is 35 years old. He is a healthcare worker. He is a full-time caregiver to his brother, who is wheelchair-bound. And 5 years ago, in 2021, there was another shooting in Boise, the Boise Town Center. And it got Salinas thinking. You know, these killers look for soft targets, he said. Who could be a softer target than somebody in a wheelchair? And the person standing right beside them, right? And so that was Jordan Salinas' wake-up call. And he decided to, in the words of the Idaho Statement, start taking his training seriously. So Salinas, it sounds like, was already a gun owner. But after that shooting, he started training every weekend. He said that he had never pointed his gun at so much as an animal, never really thought that he would have to use anything that he practiced, but he drilled a four-step approach borrowed from the military every week, always the same: observe, orient, decide, and act. Now, before this weekend, if the Idaho Statesman had profiled Jordan Salinas, here's a guy who, you know, responded to what happened in 2021. He decided he didn't want to be a victim. He wanted to be able to protect himself and his brother. And so every weekend he goes out into the desert and he trains. The reaction from gun control activists would not have been, well, at least this guy is taking his training seriously. The reaction from gun control advocates would be, look at this ammosexual who thinks he's going to be Rambo, going out and cosplaying as an action hero every weekend. They would have ridiculed Jordan Salinas. I mean, they can say they're all about training. They're not. Not for training's sake. They are about training as an impediment to gun ownership. They're about imposing training mandates as a barrier to entry, a barrier to exercising your Second Amendment rights. But people who actually train on a regular basis, they mock them. What are you so afraid of? You really think you're going to be in a position to... Right? So, Jordan Salinas told the Idaho Statesman he didn't really think that he was ever going to be in that situation. But he trained for that possibility, all the same. And as it turns out... He was in that situation on Saturday. He and his girlfriend were planning on going horseback riding in a remote part of Idaho where there is no cell phone service. They were going to stop at this In-N-Out for lunch on their way. They get out. He says he sees people running, and then he hears pop, pop, pop. And that's when he realized, oh, God, some guy's shooting. And he said it was like just mechanical. his response. That muscle memory just started kicking in. So, observe, he ran from the car, had his gun drawn, a suppressed 5.7, which, by the way, is another reason why the gun control advocates would never utter a word of praise for Jordan Salinas. Oh, my God, he's got a suppressed firearm. Oh, my God, he's got a FN 5.7. We try to ban those. He's got a suppressed 5.7. The only reason you want that is because you're a mass murderer, not because you want to stop a mass murderer, right? So he runs from the car. He is seeking out the source of the gunfire, Orient. He established sidelines. He said he reminded himself to stay disciplined on the trigger. He saw a guy who police later identified as the 24-year-old shooter standing by the drive-through window. Saw him lift a rifle up to his shoulder, fire towards cars, and he thought, okay, this is the guy, so decide. And then he acted. He leveled his pistol with both hands, and he fired. Now, police have said that this shooter took his own life. I don't know that that has been confirmed. Some of these things are likely to change. At the very least, and we don't know if the shooter was injured by either the off-duty officer or Jordan Salinas, but what the police chief in Twin Falls has said is that these individuals firing at the shooter caused him to disengage, caused him to leave that area. As Jordan Salinas said, he didn't like being shot at. And then in the parking lot of this, you know, strip mall, that is apparently where he ended his own life. When law enforcement arrived on scene, Jordan Salinas stopped firing. He told the Idaho Statesman, he thought to himself, okay, my job is done. Which, again, you know, gun control activists, if they weren't opposed to armed self-defense or defense of others in virtually any situation, would have said, good for Jordan Salinas. See, we are concerned about cops mistaking armed citizens for the perpetrator. And yet what Jordan Salinas did in disengaging as soon as he saw law enforcement was there, that's the right thing to do. They could have said that. None of them have said that. Why? Because, again, they don't want anybody acting like Jordan Salinas. They don't want anybody going out and training on a regular basis, just in case. They don't want anybody firing back at a shooter. They don't want anybody disengaging when police arrive. They don't want to do anything. They don't want a gun owner to do anything that any reasonable person would highlight. Because they're concerned that, again, that might lead to somebody picking up a gun for the first time. Or it might lead to somebody deciding, you know what, I know I've got my gun. I don't really carry it all that often. But you know what, I'm going to start training. I want to feel comfortable and competent, just in case. That terrifies them. The Idaho Statesman reports Sunday, Jordan and his girlfriend were at a local coffee shop that Jordan frequents all the time. Said drinks were on the house. I imagine that's going to be the case pretty much anywhere Jordan Salinas goes and is recognized. Not just in the coming days, but for the foreseeable future. Other regulars talking to him about what happened on Saturday. Idaho Statesman reports a customer overheard and opened his computer to a meme, one of many social media posts with Salinas' name and likeness that had circulated overnight. It showed Salinas' bearded silhouette, black against the yellow of a Gadsden flag, pistol pointed across the screen. Somebody had replaced his ball cap with a Stetson. Underneath, they had printed, "Idaho shoots back." "My buddies are over at Sportsman's buying ammo because of you," one said. They joked that the price of a 5.7 was bound to rise as often as the video of Salinas firing circulated on social media. And then Salinas' face stiffened. "Everyone says it's not going to happen here," he said. "But what if it does?" And again, the gun control lobby doesn't want you to think about that. They don't want Jordan Salinas turned into a meme. But they don't want anybody buying a 5.7 because they saw Jordan Salinas using one in this video. They don't want anybody to buy a suppressor because, again, the only reason why people would want a suppressor is to hide where the sound of gunfire is coming from. And why would you do that if you are a law-abiding citizen? Jordan Salinas could be the poster man. I'm not going to call him the poster child. But he could be the responsible, lawful gun owner that the gun control lobby says they're not opposed to. Right? How many times have we heard that? I support the Second Amendment. I'm just in favor of a few common sense gun safety laws. We're not against people owning guns. We're not against people using guns in self-defense. We just want people to be responsible. No, you don't. Because here's Jordan Salinas. And he is a lawful gun owner. He trains on a weekly basis. He did everything that you would want a responsible gun owner to do in a situation where they are confronted with a man who is trying to take as many lives as possible. And the gun control lobby will either be silent about Jordan Salinas, or they will find a way to try to criticize him. Because the gun control lobby does not support responsible gun ownership. The gun control lobby does not support people owning firearms in self-defense. The gun control lobby does not support people using firearms in self-defense. Again, training isn't good for training's sake. Training is good because it'll dissuade some people from exercising their Second Amendment rights. If we make it expensive enough, if we make it lengthy enough, some people are going to stop. And they're going to say, forget it. It's not worth it. That's the benefit of training to a gun control activist. Jordan Salinas is going out there on his own every weekend. Again, for the gun control lobby, that's not praiseworthy. That's a reason to be suspicious of Jordan Salinas. Why is he doing that? Why is that ammo sexual, spending so much time shooting guns in the desert? The good news, I think, is that A, Jordan Salinas and the off-duty officer were in a position to save lives. But the cultural takeaway from this is that most people, most Americans, seeing what Jordan Salinas did and this off-duty officer did, are going to say, wow, good for them. They're not going to have the same reaction as the gun control lobby. This reveals the depths of the animosity that the gun control lobby has towards gun ownership, towards our Second Amendment rights. And while most people are saying, wow, good on you, Jordan, again, most of them aren't saying anything at all. And the ones that are naysaying, second guessing, suggesting again that a slaughter is better than a shootout. All right. On to today's armed citizen story. We actually have another, not just Jordan Salinas. Our good deed of the day. And we have another one of those, not just Jordan Salinas and this off-duty officer, who I do hope, by the way, gets the recognition that he deserves as well. But our recidivist report, let's start there. Headline from Wisconsin, two charged with attempted homicide in Beloit shooting incident. Fairly anodyne headline. It's who was charged that I think is really interesting here. Two juveniles were arrested on Friday after police responded to reports of shot fired. This is from a WIFR in Wisconsin. One of the juveniles who was arrested, charged with attempted homicide, juvenile in possession of a dangerous weapon, and a probation violation. The other juvenile who was arrested is charged with attempted homicide, felon in possession of a firearm, and a probation violation. It was around a little bit before 1:30 in the afternoon, Friday. Police said gunshots fired in the area of Euclid Avenue and 8th Street. Nobody was hurt, thankfully. Police department says they believe the shooting to be a, quote, isolated incident. Two people fleeing the area immediately following the shooting. The two people who matched the descriptions later arrested. Both of these individuals on probation. We don't know their ages again. We just know that they're under the age of 18. One of them already a convicted felon. The other apparently convicted of some sort of misdemeanor. Not behind bars. Too young to legally possess a handgun. And I sure hope we learn more. And again, it's tough sometimes. We don't get to know a lot of details because the juvenile justice system is, you know, again, because the idea is we want to rehabilitate these juveniles. We don't want them to be saddled with, you know, this criminal history. If they can turn their lives around. We don't want, you know, employers to be able to search their name. And all of a sudden they find, oh, and they were 13. They committed an armed robbery. I get that. I am not particularly taken by that argument. But at the very least, fine. Don't release their names. Give us their ages. Give us what they've been convicted of in the past. I don't need another name, quite frankly. But what I would like to know is, are we talking about a 14-year-old or are we talking about a 17-year-old? What was the felony conviction for? And by the way, I want to know their ages. I want to know their previous criminal history. And I want to know their previous sentences. Those are the three things that I really want to know. Don't need to know their name. Don't need to know where they live. But again, tell me what they were arrested for. Tell me what they were convicted of. Tell me what their punishment was. And tell me how old they are now. That's what I want to know. And unfortunately, we don't know any of those details. But I'll tell you this. Even without knowing all of those details, the fact that you've got two individuals who are on probation who are now charged with attempted homicide. You know, police say nobody was hurt, but apparently there was somebody there in the area who they were aiming at. This would suggest that whatever sentence they received for whatever crimes they were convicted of, and in one case, again, it was a felony. We know that much. Sentences apparently did nothing to actually change these juveniles' behavior since they are now again accused of attempted murder. In addition to a probation violation. I happen to think that the attempted murder charge is more important than the probation violation. But again, should they have been out on probation to begin with? Don't know. Because this is one of the areas of our juvenile justice system that really does need reform. We need more accountability and more transparency. And you can do that again without releasing the names of these juvenile offenders. But you can give us at least the information needed so that we can make an independent judgment as to whether or not the punishments that they've received in the past fit the crimes that they're accused of committing. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. This is from, I believe, Rochester, New York, the Democrat and Chronicle. Rochester homeowner fatally shoots intruder during break-in. This happened early this morning, so we don't actually have a ton of information. According to Rochester Police Captain Frank Umbrino, officers called to a home about 5 o'clock this morning following a reported burglary. Homeowner told police that he woke up when somebody entered through the rear of his home. The homeowner then used a legally registered handgun to shoot the intruder, who was pronounced dead at the scene. Captain Frank Umbrino says at this point it appears to be a justified shooting. Homeowners cooperated with investigators, was expected to be interviewed by police later today. Police say at this point, there's no indication that the homeowner knew the intruder. But the police captain did note that the homeowner had experienced, quote, several burglaries in recent weeks. So the investigation does continue. But, you know, even in New York, as hateful as Kathy Hochul and Democrat lawmakers are towards our right to keep and bear arms, they have not managed to eradicate the right of self-defense. They make it really hard for you to legally defend yourself in your home with a firearm. But once you have gone through all of the needless steps that you have to go through before you can exercise your Second Amendment rights, once you do that, you do have the ability to protect yourself in your home. Again, when there is a reasonable fear of a death or great bodily injury, and it appears that police believe that was the case here. So we'll keep our eyes open for any more updates as they become available, if they become available. Again, if this is as open and shut as the police captain has indicated, we may not get any additional news stories here. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Good Samaritan, actually the beneficiary of a Good Samaritan, who's looking to find that man. Man searches for passenger who saved his life mid-flight. I owe this person a great deal. This from 9 News in Arizona. Patrick McGee is 77. He was on a flight from Omaha to Phoenix, and he had a heart attack when the plane was landing. He said, there's no words you can say. He said, I was gone. He said, they said I was dead and was brought back. McGee is still recovering at Abrazo Arizona Heart Hospital in Phoenix. He said the last thing that he remembers was talking to the woman who was sitting next to him. He said, we're basically just talking about life, and the next thing I know, I'm in an ambulance. And he said it was the woman who was sitting next to him who saved his life by performing CPR on him. He doesn't know her name, but he said he is desperate to try to find her. He said, I owe this person a great deal. He said, I have a son, I have grandkids, I have a wife, brothers, and I'm still here with them because of her. Katie Smolsky, who is one of his nurses, is helping with the search. She said that the woman's actions are proof that CPR is a valuable skill. She said, you know, it can truly change somebody's life, can save their life. The fact that somebody was there in that moment, was able to save his life, and we're here and able to proceed with the procedures that he needs is incredible. So McGee says he wants to reconnect with the woman, give her a hug, share his gratitude for her actions. He said, if you're out there listening to me right now, thank you so much. This was, by the way, 12 News in Phoenix. I said 9 News. This was actually picked up by the station in Denver, Colorado, because it's, again, pretty incredible story. I would hope that Southwest, again, you got to keep your passenger privacy, but I would hope that the airline, perhaps, would be able to look at that flight register, find out who was sitting next to this gentleman, reach out, and let her know, hey, first of all, thank you for saving a life on our airplane. And then secondly, this gentleman that you saved would like to meet you and thank you in person. Can we put you in contact with the hospital or the nurse? Seems like Southwest should be able to be the middleman here, because they would know who that individual is. And hopefully they're able to work with Mr. McGee and his nurse and help connect McGee to his Good Samaritan. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you abreast of all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier support you choose, you'll get some great benefits. And no matter which one you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And that means a great deal. So thank you very much. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.